Hare Krishna. A very good morning to all of you. It is a pleasure, as usual, to be here at this location of the Bhaktivedanta Manor, such a glorious place in the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm usually coming through because of my service, which is to see that the cows are happy, that agriculture is flourishing, and the community is embracing those values in the depth of their minds and hearts to please the Supreme Personality. So that is the purpose of this place. And it reminds me that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted so badly that this happened. He was sending sannyasis. He was sending not a small amount of Lakshmi for these sannyasis for many years, because the British Empire had occupied India but had not taken advantage of the Bhakti movement. And he wanted to show to the British citizens that Bhakti is the greatest value that can exist in Bharatvarsha. And they had missed it. So in some lectures, Srila Prabhupada again comes to this statement. He says, I came here. You Britishers came to India. You looted everything, but you forgot something important, so I came to deliver it. And here with us is one of the members who was part of that moment. Yadubha Prabhu is one of the dear disciples of Srila Prabhupada, who was registering and recording every single moment. He and his good wife, who now is the temple president of this marvelous project, he was following Prabhupada and registering, so we could understand later the mood of Srila Prabhupada and what was his intentions when he really put energy into this place. So I'm very grateful that you're here, and I can only beg your permission to speak on this verse, which is a very highly elevated topic, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And also next to you is, I would say, a product of this project. The beauty of the engineering of creating Brahminical culture has generated this Swami, which is like a mountain now. When I look, before he was a Brahmachari, I appreciate and like him, he's my friend. Now looking at him in Kirtan, he's like a mountain of Krishna consciousness right there, so solid, like no rain could destroy him. It's very reassuring to see you, Maharaj. My humble obeisances, and I beg for your permission that I can speak something positive on this topic. I'm very happy there are developments here. There's plans to increase the New Holland Farm, to improve the New Holland Farm, to improve the visitor experience. I've just been introduced to the idea, and I'm very pleased with that, because that's something Prabhupada really wanted in his farms. And I'll try to, at the end, as a side point, I'll try to say something on that. So, invoking the blessings of the Lord so we can understand this marvelous scripture. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, canto, the second canto, canto 2, chapter 6, text number 34. And this is such an interesting verse that I'll break the protocol just a little bit, as I have already broken. So the first line says, Nah, never. Bharati statements, me, mine, anga, O Narada, Marisha, untruth. Then he goes, upalakshate, proven to be. So he says, there's never been a moment that my statements had not been proven true. So Brahman is making a very important statement in this first line. Then he's going to make three statements, which are very important. In the next, he says, Na, Vai, sorry, Na, never, Vai, certainly, Kwachit, at any time, Me, mine, Manasa, Marisha, untruth, gati, progress. And then now he's saying that his mind has never faced a stop He's not being deterred. His mind is always fixed. His mind is always Shri Radha Gokulananda Ji Ki Jai. He says, in other words, the progress of the mind is never stopped. And then, in the third line, he says his third statement, which is, Na, let me just find here what this is. Yes, nor, me, mine, rishikani, senses, patanti, degrades, asatpate, in temporary matter. So now he's saying that his senses have never drifted towards the temporary matter. So he says three very clear statements. This, anything which I have said proves to be true. The mind is never stopped in its determination, let's put it this way. And the third one he's saying, and my senses have never drift towards the intemporal material objects. So he's given three very clear statements, and now he's going to say why this is true. And then he just says, yet, because, me, mine, rida, heart, outkatayavata, by great earnestness, drittaha, caught hold of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now he's saying why these three things are true. He's telling us these three things are true because I have caught hold of Krishna. In other words, his meditation, or his heart, as he said, is now fixed in the lotus feet of Krishna. So it's a very logical verse, and once you understand it, it becomes very clear what Lord Brahma is trying to convey to his disciple Narada. From the previous verse, Narada Muni has been describing the opulences of Krishna. Who is Krishna to us? And right here, he's revealing how can he do that. And he gives us three points, which are very important. I just thought I would share with you like this, it becomes very clear what Lord Brahma is trying to convey in this verse. So now let's sing together. Nabharati mengam risho palakshate. Nabharati mengam risho palakshate. Navakvachime manaso mrishagati. Navai kvachime manaso mrishagati. Name rishikani patantyasatpate. Name rishikani patantyasatpate. Yame ridon kantaya vato drito hari. Yame rido kantaya vata drito hari. Devotees. Nabharati menga mrisho palakshate. Navai kvachime manaso mrishagati. Amerishikandi patantya satpate. Yameridito kantaya vata drito hari. Nabharati menga mrisho palakshate. Navai kvachime manaso mrishagati. Namerishikani patantya satpate. Yamerito kantya vatadrito hari. Nabharati menga mrisho palakshate. Navai kvachime manaso mrishagati. Nameri shikani patanja satpate. Yameri tokanta vatadrito hari. Matajis. Nabharati menga mrisho palakshate. Navai kvachime manaso mrishagati. Nameri shikani patanja satpate. Yameri tokantya patadrito hari. Abharati menga mrisho palakshate. Navai kvachime manaso mrishagati. Nameri shikani patanja satpate. Yameri tokantya vatadrito hari. So, for those of you who are not familiar with Sanskrit, which is coming for the first time or second time or coming, the reason we do the Sanskrit of Spiritual Master, he will tell us that these verses are organized in a certain metric, a poetic metric. And by keeping that metric, the truth would be kept, because it's kept over time like a capsule. So this message doesn't get interpreted over time, because they're in a very tight Sanskrit metric. And every word has such a deep meaning that we could give a full class just on one word. Because then there's Sanskrit and interpretations and translations and references to concepts. So it's a very deep knowledge in a sutra, in a verse. Is that okay? You following so far? I invited two of the volunteers to stay, saying that I'll give a class that they would understand. So I'm trying to keep up with my promise. Yes. So the translation of the verse, now here, our spiritual master, our siksha of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, he's giving his translation. He's saying, and we'll repeat it, "O Narada, because I have got hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Hari, "with great zeal, whatever I say has never proved to have been false. Nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter." So I'll read it again, so we just now listen. "O Narada," I'll just do it now. Okay, sorry. I didn't say it clear enough. "O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, with great zeal, whatever I say has never proved to have been false. Nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred. Nor are my senses ever degraded by temporary attachment to matter." So Brahmaji, in his instruction to his disciple, this knowledge is transmitted from a spiritual master to his disciple. You can see the pictures of our parampara right there. Those were the spiritual masters who brought this knowledge to Srila Prabhupada, and he translated these books. You would imagine at 1 a.m., right? 2 a.m., you were there helping him so many times. And to see the amount of energy he put into these books, And his very cherished desire was that we not only distributed these books, but we studied these books. He would emphasize to his disciples, I'm very sad because I see many disciples are not reading my books. Didn't he say that? Yes. And he'd say that because he understood that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the mechanism, is the tool that we can absorb Krishna in this age. When Krishna left this world, Krishna said, I'm leaving behind the Srimad Bhagavatam. So by studying regularly the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will come to have a community. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam, this scripture, has the potency to unify all the cultures of the universe. Because it's a central point, the Supreme. We may say the Supreme has different names. I call him Krishna, someone calls him Allah, Buddha, Christ, Jesus Christ, or Jehovah. But he is the same person. So the Bhagavatam has the power of unifying. And once I was in Sri Mayapur, very concerned how I could put the residents of Mayapur together in a community, because that's my main mission, is to create communities. And he told me, if you get the leaders to read Srimad Bhagavatam together in a cooperative mood, society and community will be there. That was Radhesham. Radhesham Prabhu, he has a program which has so many thousands of university students, very intelligent university students, who go there to learn with him. And he says the reason and the way to get a community is to reach Srimad Bhagavatam together. So Prabhupada had this understanding that is through the lenses of Srimad Bhagavatam that we will purify all the things which needs to go in our heart, all the selfish aspects which needs to go. So Brahman has said the three statements. Whatever he says will always be true. His mind will never be stopped. And his senses will never be attracted to the temporal material things. Because he has surrendered to Krishna. So that is the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. And yesterday there was a class by Srila Prabhupada here, and he was saying how scriptures never change. He was making the point that the scripture never change. You may say it in a different way to adjust to the times we are, but the principle never change. It's like the gravity never change. Have you heard of gravity change? We have a new time in our universe. The gravity has changed. Now everything goes up. It doesn't. And we are fine with that. We think that's perfect. I understand that. I accept that. But sometimes if I say the principles of spirituality is just like gravity, it's a law, they don't change. Sometimes I'll have issues with that. I hear that sometimes. But times have changed. Things have changed. So that maybe this knowledge belongs to an ancient past. It doesn't apply today so much. That perception is a superficial perception, because gravity was gravity 5,000 years ago, and gravity is gravity today. Fire was fire 5,000 years ago, and fire is fire today. Fire has not changed. The sun and the sun rays have not changed. So that point is a very important point. Because once we grasp that principle, now we start to go deeper in the Srimad Bhagavatam and see that the Bhagavatam is not about the ritual. The ritual is a mechanism to bring about the principle, the understanding. The Bhagavatam is there so you can understand the path that you have to do, the behaviors you have to take to please Krishna. And therefore, like Brahmaji, fix your mind on the lotus feet, and everything you say will be true. Isn't that great? No more conflicts. Because everything you say is true. Your mind will always be resolute. And your senses will always be focused on what is important, yourself, the transcendental reality. And basically, Brahma is trying to put three philosophical realities here. The first one is that he's the source of the truth. There is a source of truth. Adi Purusham. Every morning we just sang it today. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Govindam Adi Purusham. And this song was recorded here in London, am I right? By Jamuna Devi. And Prabhupada, he wanted it so much that today in every temple of the world, of the Hare Krishna movement, we play this tune. And at the time, the resistance of having a female singing in a temple was something quite extraordinary in India. I mean, we wouldn't hear that so much. And Prabhupada says, no, I want this song in all my temples. That was kind of a signature that he had in his relationship to different genders. He was very spiritual in his approach. He would see that this is just an external covering. I'm interested in the service attitude. And it's amazing how Prabhupada wrote that signature in the bhakti world. So that's the first point, Adi Purusham. The second point is, whatever Krishna desires in his mind, that happens. And because he's Satya Sankalpa. Krishna thinks, that's why we too, like Krishna, sometimes we want something and we decide that should be, but there's some blocks, isn't it? For example, someone sees a new car and says, I should have that car. Oh, but it's so hard, I can never get the money. Or young people may think, I want to go to Australia. Oh, but it's so expensive, I can't travel there. Or old people may say, I want to live in a big house, but I don't have the money to do that. So there's a block, right? And some people come with these theories about the secret. You just desire it, and it comes. You just imagine. Have you heard the secret? There's a popular theory, right? Actually, there is something there. Once we had a pastime, our younger daughter. I better skip this one. Okay, so Satya Sankalpa, meaning basically that Krishna's mind is perfect and is none different from him. Therefore, whatever he desires manifests. And Brahmaji, as the first creator, as the engineer of this universe, has that similar potency, that whatever he wants immediately manifests. So much so that once he's angry and he kind of, how do you call this? He frowns, thank you for the word. He frowns his forehead. And from that angry moment, Shiva is born. The potency of destruction manifests from his mind because he's so empowered by Krishna that his mind and Krishna's mind are somewhat similar. To a degree that Brahmaji thinks, Narada thinks he is God. Until the moment he realizes Brahma is making prayers, he says, how come if he's God, why is he praying to someone else? Something must be wrong. And then he makes the questions and Brahma says, and now he's revealing, no, I am the servant of that person. So he's revealing that knowledge. So Satya Sankalpa. Now, that's a very interesting, important philosophical point for us to understand. Because many times we have desires, but our desires are not in line with Krishna's desires. And because of that, we experience suffering. Because we are trying to do something. Our mind has been attracted to some material aspect which is not favorable for our spiritual advancement. But because of karma, because of desires in your heart, you cannot stop it and your senses are immediately attracted. The other day we had a beautiful class by Maharaj, Swayam Bhagavam Keshav Maharaj. Got it right? They don't want him to call Keshav Maharaj and to call the full name. That was Kripa Moyas Prabhu chastising us, right? So, he was saying that you can be attracted to this world because there's a potency of Cupid which makes you attracted to other people, like the love in the air mood, you know, in the film Love, something like that. That's the Cupid working. And there's also Krishna working. So Krishna is attracting, the Cupid is attracting. It all depends where you put your focus. So when our focus drifts towards Krishna, then our desires become fulfilled. So much so that when you visit holy places, you're advised not to desire very superficial things because the Holy Dhamma will give it, and then you regret it. How many times have you desired a thing? You said, oh, why did I desire this? Because the Holy Dhamma and the pure devotees have that potency of satisfying your desires. So that's the second philosophical point he's making, his second statement. And his third point is that Krishna does not engage with the material energy. You see, Krishna himself, he's not interested in this material manifestation. This is the uniquadrantal manifestation. That's the terminology, uniquadrantal, because the manifestation is divided in four quarters. And this existence of ours is called uniquadrantal, the material world. And in this material world, we have an opportunity to enjoy things without that supreme presence. And that enjoyment will cause suffering. So here, Krishna himself is not interested. Because for him, it's like him playing with his shadow. You know, if someone is playing with your shadow, there's no entanglement. Because it's just you playing with your shadow. So Krishna playing with his shadow is there. Also, another example given is like the sun. The sun is there, but he's separate from the rays and the heat. So Krishna is the sun, but this manifestation that we're experiencing is there, but it's not him and it's him. But we experience that Krishna is in every nook, in every corner of the creation he is. And Prabhupada writes in a purport. That was verse 22. In this same line, if you go back in verse 22, in the purport, Prabhupada says, the sun is separate from the rays and heat. He's present in every nook and corner of his creation by, now he explains, Prabhupada, how Krishna is present, by expansion of happy spiritual rays. Now, I was curious to see why Prabhupada put the word happy, happy spiritual rays. And my realization into this is because when we look at the material ingredients like a floor or a wall or wood, you think, okay, that's wood, but what is Krishna in that wood? Right? Many times we'd think, Krishna is transcendental, he doesn't interact with this material world, but what is him in that wood? And one of my contemplations I'd like to share with you is his qualities. The Saguna Brahman. Saguna means with qualities. His qualities qualities that exist versus Nirguna Brahman, which is just the idea that after we finish here, there's only a void experience. There's no qualities there, just one energy. We all merge into that. But he had said no. Actually, his potencies are happy and they are present in that wood. So what potency is that in that wood? Have you ever thought about that? Anybody like to share? Have you ever thought, what is Krishna in that wood? Yes? Okay, so that's a direct... Jagannath is made of wood and he's God, so you put two things together. But I'm asking on this wall here, wood, yes, what is Krishna in that wall that you just touched?
Sun's energy.
His energy. It's one of his energies. That's true. Could you be more specific?
The energy within wood comes from the sun, and sun is also emanation from Krishna.
So you're making a connection between photosynthesis, then concentration of lignin, and finally that lignin is in that, which is something we're attracted to. You're close, but there's a little more to it. We have one here, one there.
Yes, he said energy. So the energy, fire, the element fire is in the wood. So, and this is one of Krishna's elements.
Okay, so fire is in the wood. That's another good idea.
Wood is part of a living force. A tree. And it's the living force.
Okay.
It's the origin of that wood.
Okay, so you're attributing the wood to its origin, which is a living entity which generated the wood.
Yeah.
That's also part of it. And I heard once, we have here. We want to put the microphone. The microphone is coming to you. By some cooperative action, it reached.
Krishna is in its pure spiritual form. That is just in its pure spiritual form, is what Krishna is in it.
So Krishna, in his pure spiritual form, would be present in this wood, right?
Yes, it's only that we'd have perceived it as material.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that this wood is actually spiritual, but I think it's material.
Yes.
So he's referring to the Chatusloki, right? What everything is Krishna, but it appears to be material because it cannot see Krishna. That is true. Go ahead.
I was just thinking how we normally mention that Krishna is in every atom as Paramatma. So even in the wood particle, there's atoms that are making that wood function. So just because we can't see the atoms in themselves, we can't not excuse the fact that in the atoms, Paramatma resides there as the Lord himself.
Well, you're getting very close to what I've heard, and I'll share. Maybe we'll have a synergy of thought. The idea is Krishna's happy spiritual rays are the attributes in the atom. Like the lignin atom, which is what makes us choose a wood for a wall, it has qualities, shyness, a certain dignity or royalty to it, which now in that form is what we choose wood and not plastic from China. Because if it was a plastic, we might think we're in an airport in Stansted. But if it's wood, it carries a certain royal quality. And that is in the atoms, which in a certain organization transmit that potency. So when we are attracted to the world, we think it's the wood, but it's his Brahman Saguna qualities, which are present in the wood, which is emanating that Krishna power. And I think it's coming from the wood, but it's coming from Krishna in his qualities. So we are looking for qualities in the world, but actually those qualities have an origin. And the origin is the qualities of the Saguna Brahman qualities of Krishna. So I thought that was quite inspiring when I heard, because that makes a connection how Krishna is present but not present in this material world, in every atom. Thank you, that was a very good link to that. And this connects to the fourth point of Brahma, which is saying that full connection with Krishna is the ultimate purpose of existence. I'll repeat that. Full connection with Krishna, with the transcendental, with the supreme, is the ultimate purpose of this existence. Every one of us is looking for some kind of pleasure, goal, and all of that comes from that supreme source. And as bhakti yogis, some have been here for 50 years on this path. By now, I'm sure, when you look to the world through this philosopher seeker's eyes, you'd see a spiritual reality, which is quite different from someone who has not gone through the path. So, as we realize more and more that Krishna is the ultimate purpose of existence, then everything else falls in place. And the example we have is like the spark and the fire. The fire is happening, there's a spark which falls outside the fire and it starts to lose its potency. And that's what happened in this material world. When we drift from the fire place, we start to lose our potencies. We have a few examples. Some of our very exalted gurus, they at one point drifted a little bit from the main fire and you couldn't see that potency reduced. And then at one point, they decided to come back and the potency immediately, confirmed, immediately reshined, because Krishna never forgets what we do. Wow, so much to say. The time gets short. So I'll say this. I had two pastimes to say, which kind of cleared the subject. But perhaps instead of saying the pastimes, I might ask for questions, and it's more interactive. And then, Jai Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Sitaram Lakshmi Hanuman Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. Perhaps a more interactive would be more lively, and we could then perhaps, if time, say the pastime. Any questions, any comments, any corrections? We have... Bhagavad Gita 337 purport. He's asking someone to find a Bhagavad Gita. Well, phones are faster in that sense today. Yes, someone's got it here. You want to read something from it, Prabhu? Is that? So maybe while you find it, Prabhu, someone has another question. Yes, you have a question? And then we can come back. Yes, there's a question here.
Thank you for your stimulating class.
Thank you.
Here's my question. A lot of the times we notice that devotees, they're very humble, they don't brag in any way whatsoever. Now in this verse today, it looks like Lord Brahma is kind of blowing his own trumpet a bit here. He's kind of saying how my mind never this and I am... Try to understand, well, how do we understand when devotees are in one mood and when why it's okay to be in another mood? Any insights on that one?
Thank you for that very intelligent question, right? And Lord Brahma does get in trouble at times because of what you have just described. Once he stole Krishna's friends and cows and he got in trouble. Once he got attracted to his own daughter. So there are moments that Brahma went through his rectifications. But you see, the next verse, you're going to get what you want. Brahma's going to say, you know, I'm telling you all of this, but actually I don't know Krishna. And that was something which was going to say in the pastime. Because Krishna is so great that not even Krishna knows himself. So Brahma is going to say that. And the pastime that I was going to say in relation to that was with Brahmanujacharya. Once he wants to visit some disciples in South India, and his disciple is making so many arrangements for him to come. His house, many of you might have heard this pastime, but I'll just say for the ones who have not heard. So a guru, a master, is going to the house of a disciple, and he buys everything, and he gets everything ready. So Brahmanujacharya reaches the region, and sent two of his servants to investigate if everything is okay. So they reach the house and they say, our spiritual master is coming. He says, yes, I know, I'm so busy. Just get him here, everything is fine. So they go, he continues the arrangement. He comes back. And when he arrives, the spiritual master says to the disciples, so, how is the situation? He's making fantastic arrangements for you, Guru Maharaj. And how did he treat you? Oh, he was so busy, he didn't even offer us a cup of water. We had walked so many miles, he didn't even offer a seat. Oh, we're not going there. We're going to go to the house of another disciple I have, who's a very poor Brahmin. I mean, in the kitchen, there's not even rice, which in India is like, the cheapest thing you could get is broken rice. He did not even have, every day he went to beg from people to cook. And Ramanujacharya arrives with disciples in this house. And his wife sees the spiritual master. She offers her respects. She says, Guruji, you came. Welcome. Offers a seat, offers some water. Told the disciples, don't worry, I'll cook a feast for you. So she enters the kitchen. There's not a grain of rice. She says, Krishna, What am I going to do? So she remembers that a rich man at once was trying to enjoy her, even though she was a very chaste person. He says, I'll give you money, I'll give you opulence, come live with me. He was trying to seduce her. But she was very chaste to her husband, so she said no. So she went to this merchant and said, look, my spiritual master came to my house, I'm desperate. I have to cook this for him. Give me the ingredients to cook, and I'll do anything you want. And he was happy. And then he sent so many opulent things, and she cooked. She cooked, and she cooked, and she cooked, and she cooked. And then she gave those preparations to the spiritual master. And they ate, and they were happy. A good Brahman means he's very happy to eat prasadam, right? That's the definition. Brahman likes to speak philosophy and eat prasadam. So they're all happy, and everything is fine. And then the husband comes home, and he sees the level of opulence. Maybe rasmalai, rasagula, to name a few. Kachoris and samosas and palak, paneer, sabji, and all these niceties which we have. And all of that, husband said, how did you manage? And then she said, she was very ashamed. I'm very ashamed of myself. But Guru Maharaj came. I had to serve him. So I promised this man, this very wicked man, that I'll do this. And the husband started dancing ecstasy, saying, I'm the most fortunate husband. What a dedicated wife. She's ready to sacrifice her own integrity to serve her spiritual master. I am so fortunate. And then they reveal to the spiritual master what has happened. He realizes, says, I can understand you don't have anything. How did you manage? And she said, Guru Maharaj, this man, he proposed to serve you, accepted. And he says, I'm very pleased with your devotion. Come, take my remnants to this man. You two go there and explain the situation. So they took the remnants. I hope I didn't say anything that displeased you. You're happy to go, right? It's okay. Hare Krishna, I understand. So both of them came to this wicked man and said, listen, this is the remnants of our spiritual master. Please take it. He's asking you to take it. And the man ate it. And when he finished eating, he could just taste. You know, how does prasadam taste when it's made with love? That prasadam tastes so... I remember still a samosa fried in ghee for the deities. The real samosa. Oh, crunchy, and I can't describe it. It's just from another world. So he tasted it and he said, your devotion to your spiritual master is so great. I want to know him. I want to surrender to him. So this man was purified and went to Ramanujacharya and became his disciple. So the underlying learning is that service attitude was so deep that it transformed the heart of a very wicked person who was interested in a wife of someone who's so religious, so dedicated. But because he saw there was some beauty, he wanted to enjoy separately. So that was one of the stories I'm going to say. Probably the verse.
In this purport, where Arjuna asked the question, what causes a man to act even against his own will? And he says it's lust. But within that purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, the Supreme Personality of Godhead expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss. And the living entities are parts of that and parcels of that spiritual bliss. They also have a partial independence, but by abuse of that independence, when the devotee's attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of the lust. Then it says the material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned soul to fulfill his unlimited desires. And then it says, and when completely baffled by prolonged material activities, the living entity begins to inquire about his real position.
Thank you for sharing that. That's beautiful. Actually, what you have said is so important, because we are trying in this world to find that happiness, but we forget the source is Krishna. So thank you for enlightening that. And there is a pastime of the Lord, which I may say, of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, which is Gauradhar. I don't know if you've seen that in Godrumadvip, of the crocodile. You remember that? Gauradhar is a place where we go when we do the Navadvip Mandal Parikram of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, doing that fantastic kirtan that only those who go to Navadvip can understand. It's something quite enticing. Our spiritual master also wanted that we went there. Actually, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur would say that one round on the Parikram, Navadvip Mandal Parikram, purifies the whole world. One devotee. Now you can imagine thousands of devotees doing that every year. How much auspiciousness are we sending to the world? It's unbelievable. And that's His Holiness Japataka Swami, who is the great visionary for that. And Prabhupada gave him that mission. And it so happens that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming, as usual, with all his associates. You know, he's coming with Gadada Pandit, Vrakreshwara Pandit. They're dancing, you know, and all his associates. And they come to this village. And there they see a lake, and they're ready to go there, to this lake. And this person called Ramdas, he's a cowherd man. He says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, don't go there. There's a terrible crocodile there. You shouldn't go there. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, oh? Terrible crocodile? Yes, and the cows, they cannot drink from that lake because they're afraid of this. And then Prabhupada says, if the cows are not happy, or he says something deeper, he says, the happiness of the cows indicates the level of civilization that we're in. And that statement is a very deep statement. Because we think that it means only like the Goshala team taking care of cows. That is the happiness of the cows, meaning the happiness. But no, it's a much deeper understanding that the cows and the Brahmins have a role to play. And when they're happy, the whole society is happy. And the cows are an intrinsic part which ties with agriculture. So, as I started saying, I'm very happy that the New Holland Farm is making plans to increase that consciousness. That when you do cow protection, you actually elevate the consciousness of the whole society. Because by doing it, you understand Krishna likes this. And just by thinking of Krishna, we elevate. Cows are very dear to Krishna, and we elevate. So it so happened that Ramdas came and said, there's this crocodile. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, call him in. And they started chanting the holy names very deeply. And when the crocodile came out and heard that kirtan, that crocodile touched the lotus feet of the Lord, a beautiful celestial child appeared. And then he reveals the pastime, how he got that form. And he got that form because he chastised, he messed about with Durvasa Muni, cutting his hair when he was sleeping. And Durvasa Muni, as you know, was not very happy. So he cursed him. And he was crying. He was crying, "Oh, please don't, I'm just a child, don't give me such a bad curse." He says, "All right, you'll be born in a lake, but when you hear the pastimes of Lord Gauranga, then your form will be liberated and you regain your spiritual form with full transcendental." So the mind is full of crocodiles, and that's what Brahma is saying. These crocodiles is all our desires, uncontrolled mind, attachment to the asat manifestation. And basically, we are blocking our path to service. Serving devotees, serving the deities, serving the cows, serving community, serving the visitors. So that's what happens. I'm really happy to see the community ever growing. The Haveli is already small from what I saw. You built it, it's already small. That the British population is coming here to acknowledge the Lord and all that. Even if they come just as a visitor, that's an acknowledgement. And later on, some of the crocodiles of their minds will be tamed by Krishna's mercy. So on this note, I'd like to thank you all and say something. I came to give a seminar which became unfulfilled. Unfortunately, part of the things which happened in life, I got COVID in the UK. I resisted for 2 years. And finally, the British COVID got me. I resisted India and Brazil and so many places, but here they caught me. And I couldn't give the seminar, which is called Dharma and Agroecology. I had the full support of the Bhakti School. But I'm very happy to announce that in September, there's a new opportunity called Back to the Farm. I already saw the poster. It's really nice. And they're going to give seminars. I'm not sure who is the target audience fully, but I think they want to attract people to have experiences with the farm, with the vegetable gardens. And I committed to come back in Kartik when I'm coming back from Brazil to India to stop by and give a seminar. And then we'll build up to that conference again. Because the conference really was supposed to give light to the team here about how can we integrate the cows and the grains. How can visitors see that the Saguna Brahman qualities of Krishna, they play a perfect role when I understand what it means to have opulence from natural wealth. If a visitor comes here and he tastes a beetroot from the Holland farm, he can see the taste is different from the supermarket. I was in Scotland, and one Indian gentleman and his son, he says, "My son planted a beetroot plant. For 2 months he was cultivating it. And then he cooked and we offered it to Krishna and said, 'Okay, so I think his name is Narayan. Tell me, Narayan, what is the difference?' He's a young boy, like 14. So eloquently he said, 'The qualities of the beetroot was unbeatable.' He says, 'Actually, the rice, the smell, the taste, the fragrance, everything was so different from the Tesco beetroot.'" And I said, "There you go." A simple beetroot experience telling this boy how nature works. So that seminar was bringing here John Turner, who is a four-generation farmer, who was a beef farmer. He concluded that's not good. He was a dairy farmer. His daughters became vegetarian and vegan and started to philosophize him. And he quit dairy. And then he became a grain producer. He has 195 different wheat varieties in his field. They all grow together in biodiversity. That wheat is harvested. Krishna is aware. It is milled in a windmill, and the flour goes to an artisan baker. He bypassed the whole middleman. Now he understood that his grain has to have a resting period. I'm giving a little summarize what the seminar would be. A resting period of 3 years. And Sitaram Prabhu with the Ahimsa Dairy Foundation liaised with John Turner. And the Ahimsa dairy cows came in that 3-year period. So John was spending money to put crops to regenerate his soil. Sitaram was spending money to give cover crops fodder for his cows. They found the point of win-win. Then all the straw of the wheat and barley and oats were then used for the cows at a much cheaper price. So you could see the grains and the milk together. Not only that, John Turner had the courage to tell me, I believe the Ahimsa dairy is like the cherry on the cake. You have first a big operation and then the milk comes. And I said, John, that's what I've been preaching. You're a light to what I've been saying. Because if you go for dairy alone, you suffer. It's like the deities. Unless you have all these qualified Brahmins every day coming, the whole community is serving, you're struggling. Prabhu, I can't do puja today. Can you come? Have you ever heard have that call? Can you cover me today? I'm desperate. My mother is here. But when you have a strong community of Brahmins, look at that. That's the spiritual world. So he was telling me what I've been looking for ages. And Sitaram Prabhu was able to liaise with him. I was so happy with his work that I wanted to share with all of you. The Bhaktivedanta manner has to have that symbiosis between grains and Ahimsa dairy. That's the ecological solution for the planet that we're looking for. Someone who is intelligent and comes and see this, he will surrender to you. He says, you guys have got it. And then you can tell him, not only we got it, but our spiritual master got it in the 60s when you guys knew nothing about this. Read his books and you testify that. So that was the idea, was to bring that experience here. And there's much more, which will reveal how he's producing oat milk. And he wants to engage and sit around the bulls, the oxen, to grow that wheat. So you have the oat milk for the vegan community from the bulls. And then the real milk, like a cherry on the cake. So a beautiful work of research, of hard work. And I wanted to share that. And I want the manor to step up. And you have so many acreage. We have to come up with a plan which will make the visitors, just like when they go in the Kew Gardens, they see, oh, this grass from Tanzania, this grass, this banana tree. I was shocked. I went there. It's like I was in Brazil again. The waterfalls and the banana trees and the heliconias. And I said, I'm home. And I could just teach agroforestry to my good friend here who's always with me. So in a nutshell, I just wanted to thank you all. I've gone over time. It was really a pleasure. I've been so well received by all of you. I'm indebted. And the Ministry of Cow Protection and Agriculture is open and happy to work with this community. I'm really happy the temple is in the hands of such qualified Brahmins. Prabhu Yadavar and his wife are a beacon, someone we look up to. And we should make a film about these things. That's what I want to talk to you about. All right. Is that okay? Can we end on a sweet note?